All right, guys, we mentioned last week how if you pay attention to halachic details, you might find that there are larger ideas at work. We saw that with Marv. We're going to have a similar thing today. Let's take a brief survey first for a second. And how many of your shuls at home does the chazan say kiddush and shul on Friday night? Okay, so most of them, right? Got a pretty steady majority. You might have noticed. Okay, if you look around Medinat Yisrael, you'll discover you basically cannot find that anywhere in Israel. But you cannot, probably, you all check it out this Shabbos, see your shul Friday night. You will not find any shul where they recite Kiddush in shul. Again, you can say it's okay to divim in Hagim, but maybe there are larger ideas at work in terms of the nature of Kiddush, the nature of halachic history, how halacha develops over time, and we'll try to explore some of those larger ideas here in today's shir klal. So let's just start with the arguments for both sides. Why would one make Kiddush in shul? Why would one not make Kiddush in shul? So it all stems from a Gemara in Pesachim. Now, apparently in Talmudic times, they both made Kiddush in shul and then came home and made Kiddush again. And Rav and Shmuel are trying to figure out how this works and why. So let's just review very briefly the first Gemara. Okay, Otam ben Adam shekitshu beit haKnesset. So if you said Kiddush in shul, Amar Rav, yidei yayin lo yatsu, yidei Kiddush yatsu. Let's do the second one first because it's easier. What does Rav think in terms of Kiddush? Everyone who hears Kiddush and Shul has fulfilled the mitzvah. That means when they get back home, in theory, there's no reason for them to make another Kiddush. Okay, that's Rav. What? So apparently Rav does not have that rule. What about the second part, guys? The first part, actually? Yidei Yayin Lo Yatsu. What's that a reference to? That's actually a reference to the Bar Pi Agafen. What's the claim? Even according to Rav, when you get back home, you would make, if you want more wine at the meal, you would have to make a Bar Pi Agafen. Now, that's not about Hilchot Kiddush. That's about Hilchot Brachot, right? That the bracha you make in shul doesn't cover you for the wine you want to drink at home. So we got the Rav position down, right? You fulfill Kiddush in shul, your burnt your guffin does not carry over to the house. Okay, next. V'shmul amar af yidei Kiddush lo yatsu. Now notice the word af there. What does it sound like? Shmuel thinks?
Neither.
So when you get back home with your shmul, you got a double trouble, right? You need a new Kiddush and you would need a new borei priya guffin. Okay. But now that we want to know, we'll do the rest outside. So why are we making Kiddush twice? So according to Rav, what's the problem? Since we all are Yotzi, Kiddush, and Shul, why are you making Kiddush back at home? What does Rav answer to that question?
For our family.
Exactly. Not every family member always goes to Shul. So you make Kiddush at home for the family members who aren't in Shul. Great. According to Shmuel, we have the opposite problem. We know we have to make Kiddush at home. What is the purpose of Kiddush and Shul? What's Shmuel's answer to that question? Okay, so apparently in Talmudic times, how did hospitality work? The community would provide a meal in the shul. So if you were a traveling Jew who showed up in the shul Friday night, they would say, you know what, all guests stay in shul afterward, there's going to be a dinner being offered. And that, because what's Shmuel's rule? One second, Yemen. As Cook said, Shmuel's rule, ain't kiddush ela b'suda. Now apparently Rav does not accept that rule. Everyone at this point? We're used to Shmuel. Apparently Rav does not accept that rule. But Shmuel thinks you can only be yotze kiddush if it's connected to the meal. Why do we make kiddush in shul if you don't like Shmuel? Well, there are people who are going to be eating in shul
binyamin. Two questions. One, I thought if you're in the same household or adjacent room, that one of the brothers can carry over to the room.
Yeah, that you might be right, but notice here we're going from the shul back home.
That would say for the orchim in the shul, would they be yotzei yayin?
Ah, okay, that's a good question. Go ahead, next question.
Second, so does that mean if I'm a, can I be a baal tefila if I already davened already and be yotzei everyone else?
That's also a good question, but not for now. Okay, we got the first Gemara down? Okay, now, if you remember from last week, everyone should notice an interesting discrepancy here in how halacha plays out, where things get a little more complicated. Okay, if you remember the rule book from last week, who should win, Rav or Shmuel?
Rav.
Why should Rav win? Because Shmuel, very good, David Berger, excellent. Shmuel only wins in? See, he remembers monetary cases. But here, actually, who wins?
Shmuel.
So really, rules are meant to be broken. It's not always true that you can plug in a rule 100% of the time. Okay, here it's not a monetary case, and yet Shmuel wins halachically. We say, ain't kiddush ela b'makom suda. Okay, great. Now we have to figure out why there'd be such a rule, which I'm going to leave aside for now. But let's immediately get to the contemporary situation. Okay, so we follow Shmuel. Kiddush is linked to a meal, right? They said kiddush in the time of the Gemara because people ate in the shul. So now let's justify the Israeli minhag. So if I asked you why in Israeli shuls all across the entire country is no one making kiddush until Friday night, what would be the obvious answer? Because no one's eating in shul, right? It's not that we've given up on hospitality, but the nature of hospitality has changed. Right? How does it happen now? Maybe in a lot of shuls this happens. Like the president gets up and says, if you don't have a meal, speak to, you know, Moshe Shapiro over there in the corner. He's the one who finds meals. But no one's actually eating. And shul, so you could argue Kiddush and shul would become a pointless endeavor at this point. Okay, we've been doing it so far? So in terms of this argument, we have a debate. One side debate is really easy. Why would you not make Kiddush and shul? Because it serves no halachic purpose whatsoever. Since Kiddush is supposed to be linked with a meal, and no one is actually eating in shul, Kiddush and shul is pointless. Dan Reicher.
What if you have like a bar mitzvah or a simchah in shul, and because we are eating shul?
So then you can't be able to take Kiddush and shul.
I'm saying there is a halachic purpose. Like,
no, but think about it. What are you guys talking?
Romer.
Does Romer make Kiddush and shul Friday night?
Yeah.
Does anybody sit and eat dinner afterwards?
Sometimes there's a simchah.
But let's say there's no simchah.
No.
And they're still making that Kiddush.
Yeah.
Right, so why are they making it as a matter of course? Even though, you're right, in individual circumstances it might make sense. But they're doing it every Shabbos.
Right.
By the way, Dan Reicher is in the top five, you know, former sports fanatics. He and Yom Zimmer are, that's a new category. And we have a category for Josh, can I do Josh Goldsman? Okay, Josh Goldsman wanted to be in a category. So I said, Josh, what are you passionate about? He said, not really anything. So we decided he's the top five most moderate guys in Yeshiva. Okay, so we have a new category for Josh Goldsman. Okay, I'm giving him a second category also. Okay, he's a top five most moderate guys. Then I said to him, what do you want to do in life? He says, maybe I'll be a lawyer. I said, what about the long hours? He said, I'm willing to do those long hours. I said, Josh, you could be one of the top five workaholics in yeshiva. But then we realized it's not quite true yet. He's decided he's one of the top five aspiring workaholics. Okay? So Josh, go to me. You go there. Okay? Okay. Great. So now we've got, one side divided. Okay? Okay, we got one side of the divide. Okay, we understand now why you wouldn't want to make Kiddush in shul, because it's pointless. But what about all our shuls back home, like in Roma or in Miami, where they are making Kiddush in shul? Let us try to justify that. We're going to see over the course of today's year, I think, four justifications, and they all have different ramifications. Okay, so let's try to justify why someone would still want to make Kiddush in shul. Okay, so actually, just before we get to that, just to show you the other position, if you look at the tour, source 3, we'll skip source 2 for a second, middle of the third line. He says exactly what you guys said. Kevin de hashta lek orchin, de achli hatam. Since what's true in our day, says the Torah? There's no guest eating in shul. Karov hadavra, liot bracha levatala. This bracha is pointless. Right, there's absolutely no point to the bracha. No, but let's say some people are going to do it anyway. Hamakadesh beta knesset, ein lo lishto miayin shel kiddush. De kevin she'en yotze bo, she'en lo b'makom suda. You guys might have noticed in your shuls back home when they make Kiddush and shul, the chazan doesn't drink from the wine. What happens? The kids line up. The kids line up to drink. Now, why are we doing that? So why doesn't the chazan drink? Because he can't drink. Because there's two halacha guys. Kiddush is supposed to be makom suda, and you're not supposed to start eating and drinking till you fulfill your mitzvah of kiddush. But when our contemporary chazan makes Kiddush and shul, does he fulfill his mitzvah of Kiddush? No, because he's not eating. Since he doesn't fulfill his mitzvah, he actually can't drink. Right? He hasn't heard Kiddush yet, as well, even though he said Kiddush. Right? And therefore, we deal with it by giving the wine to a child. That's why we give the wine to a child. We'll discuss what kind of child and why that's okay later. But that is why we give the wine to a child. In fact, I remember, in 13, you don't realize these halachot. I remember like once as a kid, like lining up again. And someone said, no, now that you're 13, you can't do that anymore. Right? Now it's just for those who are under 13 who are... don't have the same halachic restrictions. Okay, let's go back now to justify what... Yeah, Rafi.
When you say it's not eating Kiddush, does that mean it's not
Kiddush Eom? He's not Yotzei Kiddush Eom.
Didn't he say it?
He said it, but since there's a rule of Ein Kiddush Makom Suda, you have to... He's right, it's kind of ironic, Rafi. A person said Kiddush and was yet not Yotzei Kiddush. Yeah. Oh, that is a great question. Maybe we should go out of order. Okay, should we go out of order? Because Yeshua asked a great question. Okay, what do you say? Is that okay? Binyamin Zerman's in favor of his brother. Who asked that question, Yeshua Zerman? That's such a good question. Okay, Yeshua says as follows. I understand. We try to give kids the right kind of chinuch, right? Get used to the right thing to do. Are we giving them the wrong message here? What do we say doing here? We're getting them used to the idea that you could drink wine and shul. But we shouldn't do so because the reality is they haven't been Yotzei Kiddush yet, and... okay, so everyone turn the page. We'll go out of order. It is the Magen Avraham's question. Very good, Yeshua Zerman. Okay. In fact, Actually, he says it a little bit differently, though. Look at the first line of Magen Avraham. Magen Avraham is a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. Matimo l'katan, give the food to a katan, the wine. Af al gav de aser l'achil l'katan iser b'yadayim. K'moshe katov v'siman shimim gimel. So it's a little bit like Yeshua's question. He doesn't use the word chinuch at this point. What does he claim? Well, you wouldn't feed a kid something that's treif. Right, you wouldn't say to a kid, even though since you're under bar mitzvah, here, have this, you know, I have some trouble now because everything in America is kosher. But here, have this Hostess Twinkie. That's the one treat candy bar left. Right? Yeah. I wouldn't say to a kid, here, have a Hostess Twinkie since you're only six. So why should I say to him, here, have this wine before Kiddush? Right, can you tell me why they might not be the same? Okay, think a little analytically and conceptually here, guys. Again, he would say, I wouldn't give a kid a Hostess Twinkie. Why can't I give him to drink wine before Kiddush? Rafi, what do you say? Excellent. So that's the Magen Avraham's own answer. But the Rafi and Simi are still the best covered two guys. That has not changed. Here we go. Hainu b'davish yesh bo lav. What's the claim? When can you feed the kid directly? If there is a prohibition. If the Torah says, don't eat pork, then you can't feed him. The Hostess Twinkie. Okay. Avol kiddush einu ela aseh. What's the claim here? It's true you're not supposed to eat before kiddush, but it's kind of like, don't do it before you've done your mitzvah aseh. That's not the same as a real concrete negative prohibition. Now notice, according to Magen Avraham's first answer, it's all about severity, really. It's more severe to eat concrete treif than to eat before kiddush. One's a lav, one's an aseh. Therefore, you wouldn't feed the kid treif, but you will let the kid have wine before kiddush. But maybe it's not about severity. Jake Rimberg, what do you want to say? Binyamin?
Maybe the treif is inherently yesterday, and it can be lav, while
that's it. We have a real London over here. You see, Rav David is like Shepin Nachas over there in the corner. Okay, so look at after the ellipsis, guys. End of the fifth line. See what it says, V'yei Shchiluk? This is a very lumdish Shchiluk. Okay, you could be like one of the five lumdanim of the yeshiva. Okay, look at what it says here. Yei Shchiluk, there is a distinction. Ben achilat iser, l'achilat heter, bizman ha'asur. What distinction do you make? It's not about severity. It's conceptually something very different is going on. What's the claim? There's tray food, and there is food that's perfectly fine, but
no.
I am eating it during a time period that somehow there's a problem. What's the claim? Wait, this works even better if you think like in metaphysical terms. Right? Again, there are different ways. This is a much interesting philosophical question, right? How do I think about tray food? Is tray food just something I'm not supposed to eat? Do you view it as almost like radioactive, as it were? Because it's almost like a visceral thing, you see what I'm trying to say? Like you wouldn't want that food in your body. It's not even a question whether it's at fault or not. If you think about tray that way, then it becomes even better. What's the Magen Avraham saying? Okay, he's just a kid, but you don't want a kid to have food that is somehow objectively traced going into his body. Why is that not true here? Because the wine is perfectly kosher. It's just that since you're supposed to hear kiddush first, therefore you shouldn't have it. You know, that in that scenario, we don't mind if kids don't follow the halacha as well, right? There's nothing like there's not like this metaphysical taint going into them. Okay, just to summarize one analogy, guys. I'll take comments in 1 second. You know what it'd be like, guys? It'd be like feeding a kid on a tzom. Right, we feed kids on fast days, right? Would you say, how can you feed the kid on a fast day? It's bad chinuch. No, he's just a kid, and the food is not per se treif. It's not iser in that deep sense. Therefore, we could give it to a kid on a fast day. Just to someone's end, I'll take comments. Yeshua, excellent question. How could you feed a kid? Magen Avraham had two answers. The Rafi wouldn't answer. Maybe just treif is more severe halakhically than before kiddush, like a lav or saseh. Maybe there's a deeper point that Binyamin's saying, which Magen Avraham says later, that the problem with feeding a kid is when it's objectively treif. Now when it's mutter food in a given context. Moshe Klein.
So why would you get to drink it at all? Why does the wine have to be drunk?
Okay, so later he quotes a Gemara, the Torah quoted, that says, there's even Hamakadesh Tzarech Lishtot. Right, so apparently that is part of the ritual. Like why that is a good question for us, but not for us right now. Okay, so you guys are asking great questions. What a group here. Okay, so I'm not going to get to right now, but the Magen Avraham has a debate. Should you give it to an older child? Or, yes, notice, did everyone get this far? Or a younger child? Do you want someone who's ugiya l'chinuch or low ugiya l'chinuch? Now, why is it cut both ways? Very interesting far both ways. Why might you prefer the 12-year-old? Why might you prefer the 4-year-old? What would be the argument both ways? Benji.
That he's old enough to understand the reasons why or why not he's allowed to do it, and therefore he's not going to think that it's...
You're much too clever. I don't think you have to go that far. Okay, but you haven't heard.
If he's at the age of chinuch, maybe we should already start teaching him that he's not allowed to
eat. Excellent.
But if he's at the age of chinuch, he can understand that he's fulfilling the mitzvah.
Okay, exactly right. Very good, Binyamin. Okay, if he's 4, you might say, if you're thinking about he shouldn't be eating too early, it's a problem, luckily. Obviously, the younger you are, the better it is, right? He's less responsible because he's only 4. So that's if I'm exclusively focused on the Isser to eat before Kiddush. What if I'm asking your question, Moshe Klein? I want someone to drink it who's actually fulfilling things on some level. It has to be purposeful. The 11-year-old's drinking would make it more purposeful than the 4-year-old's drinking. So it depends which is the side am I focusing on. So I skip that part, but he does have a question. Which kid do I prefer giving it to? Jake.
Why would the Chazan say this bracha if he's going back home? Why would he say Kiddush if he's going back home to eat? Why? Presumably there's people in the community.
We'll come back. Your point's a very good point. It's going to come back in the third solution. I mean, who's making this Kiddush? The Chazan or one of the guests?
Right.
That's your question, right?
Okay,
although just your question more for Talmudic times, like in the contemporary situation, there are no guests.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay, Ben Zion.
So the Magen Avraham answers why.
I was thinking of making that pun. But I wasn't sure if it was worth it or not. But yeah, but go ahead.
The Magen Avraham argues why there's a difference between treif and drinking wine before Kiddush, but he doesn't answer the question, the educational problem of giving treif.
Okay, I'm gonna leave this side now. You're sure?
I think that Magen Avraham doesn't really deal with the fact that. You're kind of teaching, as opposed to on a tzom, where you're giving the kid the food, but you're not telling him it's the right thing to do to eat on a fast day. You're never saying that. What you're really implying by giving them the yai and saying, oh, you guys are yotzei in our mitzvah, you're basically telling them, the little children, that this is the right thing to do, as opposed to in the case that you brought up, where you're not telling them it's the right thing.
Okay, you know what? I'm debating whether I should do this tangent or not, but I'm going to do it because it's funny. And also, I'm going to make your question even stronger, but I'm not going to answer your question. Okay, the idea of giving a kid wine comes up in a Gemara and Erevin. Because here's the following case, guys. We want to say, at every Yom Tov, we say a bracha called Shechianu. There's a Gemara in Erevin that discusses, what about saying Shechianu on Yom Kippur? Now, what's the problem? When do we usually integrate the bracha of Shechianu?
After
we usually say it during Kiddush, right? One of the bracha on Yom Tov night will be Shechianu. Obviously, it's not a good option on Yom Kippur because there's no meal and there's no Kiddush. Now, anyone know what we actually do today? Anybody pay attention? When do we say Shechianu on Yom Kippur? We actually do say Shechianu on Yom Kippur. Okay, very good. We say it in Davening. If you look at the Kol Nidre text, right after Kol Nidre, the Chazan says Shechianu. But the Gemara suggested at one point, maybe we should say it in Shul and give the wine to a child. Remarkable Gemara. We don't do this. This lost out. And the Gemara says the reason why we don't do this is Shema Yisrach, which means the child might get pulled in the wrong direction. I have to tell you a funny story before I get to Yeshua Zeman's question. Okay, there's a well-known Jewish history professor named Chaim Soloveitchik, okay, who is the son of the Rav. He also is a very harsh critic if he thinks like a book was not written well. See, he wrote a very famous review, a devastating book review once. Put this way, I'll give you a good advice for life, guys. If you're not very knowledgeable about Judaism, don't write a book about the history of halacha. It's a bad idea. Okay, so a fellow wrote a book about tshuvot over the course of history. The guy was really an ignoramus. Okay, he made unbelievable mistakes. Okay, so Chaim Soloveitchik wrote a famous, devastating review of this book. Okay, so here I'll give you two good examples of the mistakes this guy made. Okay, one is actually not in the review. I don't know how Chaim missed this one. But the guy says to administer the death penalty in halacha, the high priest needs to be there. Okay, there's no such halacha that the Kohen Gadol has to be present at a death penalty court case. Can anyone tell me what mistake he might have made?
By Jesus.
Okay. He read a Gemara, yeah?
Maybe
okay, you guys are, no, you're not going to get it. He said, the Gemara says, no, not because you're not smart, just it's impossible to forget. Okay? The Gemara says, Dinin Nefashot B'chaf Gimel. What does that mean, Dinin Nefashot B'chaf Gimel? Okay, you need 23 judges to do a capital crimes case. How did this fellow read it? Dinin Nefashot B'Kohen Gadol. Guys, if that's your reading, you shouldn't write a book about this. Okay? So that is one famous mistake this guy makes. Also, he read this Gemara in Irvin. Why don't we give the kid wine Yom Kippur night? Shemi Yisrach, he'll get pulled in. So the way this guy read it as, the kid's going to become addicted to wine. Right? We don't give him wine once because he'll develop an alcohol addiction and it won't be good for him. That is not what the Gemara means by Shemi Yisrach. What Shemi Yisrach actually means is the kid will start to think that it's okay to drink wine on, not that he'll become physically addicted because we gave him wine once. Right? It is Yisrach, he'll be pulled in by the wrong idea. So Yeshua, in some ways, that Gemara actually is a makes your question even stronger. In a different context, we had the very fear that you raised. It's a very good question, but I'll leave it be for now. Shai.
At the same time, like most people under 12 don't think that they're not chayav kiddush, like that they didn't, they're not, they think they heard kiddush already, so they don't think they're doing something wrong, like they heard kiddush.
That makes it better or worse, according to your argument?
Better to have wine, like it's, they don't really think they're having wine before kiddush.
Ah, that's interesting. Very interesting, Shai. Yeah, Ben-Yar?
two practical questions. One, let's say we don't have any ketanim, who do we, who drinks it?
Oh, okay. Okay, so the answer actually is that the chazan should drink a revit of wine, because there is an opinion of the gonim that wine itself could be the suda.
Okay, and what about, can a non-Jew drink it, if you're like a janitor in the shul?
Oh, I think we would actually go with the chazan at that point, not with the janitor. Yeah. Okay, great. Good, Yeshua, excellent. Let's go back to our original question, though. We justified why didn't we drop Kiddush and Joel. Why would anyone still make Kiddush and Joel? Okay, go back to the first slide, guys. We're going to see four justifications. Okay, we'll start with the first one, guys, and I got a great sports analogy coming up in 10 minutes, so hang in there. Okay? Here we go. Dan Rech, you still with us? Excellent. Okay, look at the Rashba. Epshalom Ode, the Meikara Tiknu Lakadish made a Knesset. They made it to Kant to say Kiddush and Joel. The Ikra Shal Takana Mishim Orchenave. Why'd they make this Takana? For the guests. Umishum de zimnin de ikorchen. Zimnin de ikorchen? Sometimes there are guests. Tiknu akadish ben ika ben leka. What does he claim? How does sometimes takana work? We don't do it on a case by case basis. We just say we're always going to do it. Even though sometimes the reason applies, sometimes. So what does he want to claim? They didn't say you check every, very good. You check every week, is there a guest in Shul? You just make Kiddush. And then he wants to claim, and here's a little bit of a jump, just like you don't check on a week-by-week basis, even later in history, if there are never guests in Shul, you still take Kiddush. What's his basic argument? The power of tradition. Once it's in place, we do it, whether or not the rationale supplies. I'm going to give you two halachic analogies, guys, and then two sports analogies. We'll start with two halachic analogies, which he quotes. He quotes Chazar HaShatz as an example. Why is Chazar HaShatz an example? Chazar HaShatz was for those who didn't know Yamidah. That was a much bigger problem when people didn't have Sidurim. You could claim that nowadays, either A, every Yisrael knows it, or B, everybody has A. But yet we still do Chazar HaShatz. His other example was a little more tricky. Anyone know what that was a reference to? What's Bracha Achat Me'ein Sheva, Rafi? I'm sorry? Good guess. Close. Moshe Klein? Very good. On Friday night, we say Magen Avot. Now, guys, just think for 1 second. Why is it called Bracha Achat Me'ein Sheva?
Oh, it's a summary.
Very good. If you just look at it for a second, it's an abbreviation of the entire Amidah. It is one bracha that encapsulates the seven, right? Magen Avot, right? Mechayim Meitim. We're going through all seven. Why did they originally fix that bracha? Because people, they didn't want people to have to walk home alone from shul. The shuls were out in the fields. It was dangerous to walk home alone. That is basically a halachically instituted delay. It's a delay so everybody can catch up and
like,
walk home together.
That's like on weeknights, we say, in America, you say right after, Shomer
Yisrael. Very good, very good. That's right. Very good, that's the parallel. But what could you say once again? If your shul's in the middle of the neighborhood and no one's going to have to walk home alone in a dangerous area, you wouldn't need that. And yet, we still do it again. So this is going to be the first of the four defenses. It's simply, we do it because it's the middle, even if the reason doesn't apply. Now, you might say, oh, that's a crazy thing. Now, obviously, religion has a certain conservative traditional aspect to it. I'd say all of life has that aspect to it. We like to do things because we've always done it. It's part of it. Here we go. Two examples, guys. Okay? A baseball and a football example. Right? The real traditionalists hate the designated hitter. Okay? Why do they hate the designated hitter? Because it wasn't true for most of the history of baseball until the 1970s. Right? The pitcher was back. Well, it's on the side, and there should be a designated hitter. Now, you could argue there's a little tricky, because there you could argue that it's not, meaning, though, let's say the real traditionalist, when it says pitchers should bat, is it pointless for pitchers to bat because they never get a hit? Well, you could say, no, there you could say it's not pointless, I admit it. It's not pointless there because it creates interesting strategy questions. Should I take out the pitcher for a pinch hitter? Right, which you don't have in regards to leagues. I agree, 1 second, Benji. I'd agree there, you might say it's not pointless. But my next example is even better. Okay, in football, you still kick the extra point. Right, if you excuse the pun, that really is pointless. Right, I think if you do a study, you'll go look on the internet, the extra point is missed like less than 5 times a year. Right, Dan Ricker?
6 times less.
Okay, there you go. Okay, so why are we still doing this endeavor? Right, everyone knows he's going to make it. Right, now why are we doing it? Because we've always done it. That's how you play football. You score a touchdown, you kick the extra point. It doesn't matter, we all know what's going to happen. Right, so certainly in a religion, there's going to be some of that as well. Right, so one possibility, why do we still do it? We still do it because we've always done it. Yeah, Dan.
The second example might not work. In a couple of years ago, they're testing to see if you can move farther.
But even the resistance to that move is trying to say something, right? Why are people resistant? Because they want it to be the way it's always been. Okay, Ben, do you want to say something else?
I was going to say that DH is not like a good example because all of Am Yisrael want to be
okay, yeah, Rob. So if you say it this way, you'd have to say the mere fact that we're keeping an old takana going is already enough to not make it a brach levatal. Okay, you sure? Okay, fair enough. Okay, so let's see if there's another defense. We've got one defense on the board so far. Maybe someone likes this defense so much. We're doing it because it's a fixed takana, and therefore we just keep going. Maybe there's a way to find the halachic point to doing so. I'm going to try to come up with three ways to do so. Okay, let's start with the Rush. Okay, the Rush quotes Rebbeinu Yonah, and he says as follows. Mehashta v'brach levatala mein shamarchem, v'yonah pirsht ein brach levatala. Da'adamin ein kere shalmakum suda, hainu midrabanan. It's true there's a rule called the Enkel Shemakim Suda, but who made up that rule?
Rabbi.
The rabbis. Not only that, Vasmechu Rabbana Kroi. Where did it come from? He's claiming it's not even such a convincing drasha, which is true. If you look at the Rashbam, always his first basis for the rule, Enkel Shemakim Suda, a pasuk in Yeshayahu, it says, V'karata l'Shabbat Oneg. What's the claim? Kol and Shabbos is a reference to Kiddush. Oneg is a reference to Kamil. Kiddush and Kamil should be. Right. I think we can all agree. It's not the only way to read the Pasuk. The Pasuk could just mean Karat l'Shabbat Oneg, Kol Shabbos a day of delight. It's not obvious there's a hidden reference to Kiddush in there. So I think the Rush is almost making two different points here. All right, so make one other point, guys. Usually details, halachic details that are derived from Nevi'im and Ketuvim, are they Durabanan or Duraita usually? They're Durabanan. Very good, Cook. Usually something derived from a halachic detail. Oh, Cook, wait, I forgot to sneak in the yeshivish word there for you, Cook. We didn't read that Rashbam yet. Okay, we'll see. Maybe we'll get there later. Okay, so there's a lot of reason to think this rule is Durabanan. It's derived from Yeshayahu. It might be an Asmachta, not the really authentic reading of the Pasuk. So what does that mean? What does that, how does that affect us? So keep reading third line. Ikra Kiddush Min HaToru. Okay, now we can work out the argument. What's the argument here, guys? It sounds like there are two levels to the mitzvah of Kiddush. What's the biblical level? What do I have to do? Recite a text. What's the rabbinic level? Link it to the meal. Rocky, you just had a third. You had a creep point there. We'll get there in 1 second. Okay, now what does he claim? When the chazan gets up, even in our days, in Romer, and makes Kiddush, it's not pointless. And it's not a brach levatala. Why is it not pointless, according to Rebbeinu Yonah? Every single person in Shul has now done what? Fulfilled. Which level? The first level. Right, am I getting that? There's the derite, the level of the recital. There's the rabbinic level, Makom Suda. Everybody in Shul has at least fulfilled the right level. So you can't tell me it's pointless. You can't tell me it's a bracha levatala. So that would be a little bit better than the first solution, that it's actually accomplishing something. It's not just that we're going to keep the tradition going. We are actually accomplishing something. Okay, yes?
So is it by the fact that the little kid drinks it that the whole congregation is Yotzei, or is it the fact that you're just making the bracha?
Okay, so you guys, Moshe Schwartz and Rafi just hinted at something that's very sharp here, which we'll do this outside. In theory, there are three levels. There's recital of text on a cup of wine, and then the connection to the meal. You could wonder if you're on the right level, was it just recital per se, or was it recital plus wine? That can matter greatly if you think about the Aruch HaShulchan's critique of the Rush. Some of you understood this. Okay, again, what does the Rabbeinu Yonah say? We do accomplish something. Why do we accomplish something? Everyone at least fulfills their... the right level of the mitzvah. But, guys, who remembers the Aruch HaShulchan's critique? What does he say, Moshe?
That you fulfill your right level by saying it in the Shemona Esrei first. But then you wouldn't have...
Exactly. If I think the first level was just a recital of text, I'm just supposed to talk about Shabbos, arguably everybody did that when they said the Shemona Esrei. So now you're still stuck. You're still accomplishing nothing. The right level and did in the Amidah. The rabbinic level they'll do when they... get back home. So this middle level, when you say the middle stage, when the chazan says it, once again, accomplishes nothing. That is the Aruch HaShulchan's critique of Rebbeinu Yonah. But think for a second, guys. And here's where things get pragmatically interesting. Even according to the Aruch HaShulchan's critique, who is the one group of people that might still get benefit from Kiddush and Shul based on this? Yes, you need to follow a group. It's a very interesting question sociologically. How big is this group? It's a group of people who... come to shul, but don't daven. Right? That would be the one group that would benefit from this scenario. How big is that group. But again, maybe in some shuls, those guys like hanging out the last two rows, maybe it's a big group, right? They come to shul, but they don't daven. But then they wouldn't fulfill the deraita level in davening, and they would get the deraita level from Kiddush Yeh Yeshua.
So I don't really understand how you can be yotzei in Kfila and in Kiddush, because like we have Shema.
So Yeshua had a very good question. He asked me in Chavruta before, so I'm not sure. I have to think about the answer. Okay, we'll see what the other rabbis think. Yeshua thinks that maybe you should need kavanah. It might depend on the mitzvah tshikha kavanah question. Maybe you should need kavanah to convert your vayichulu into a kiddush for it to serve as, for your amidah to serve as kiddush. And you don't have that intent.
Shema, if you don't have intention of Shema being Talmud Torah, then it isn't Talmud Torah. It's just saying Shema. It's like the same type of thing.
No, it's opposite. If you're learning Talmud Torah, you read the Shema.
Remind me again, which way you think of it, if I do it?
If I'm saying Shema during davening, right, and like I have no intention of being like Talmud Torah, then it isn't considered any Talmud Torah. It's considered you davening. So in this case, if you're saying the word davening as just davening, then I don't understand how you can be able to say Kiddush.
Let me just check with other Bay for a second. Does he remember correctly? No, but he doesn't think why I say that depends on the mitzvah tshikha kavanah or not.
Exactly.
No, but if we pass the mitzvah and tshikha kavanah,
it wouldn't matter.
But as David's pointing out, there may be certain mitzvah which are not subject to that debate. Because they're so internal, they're so about awareness, that lack of kavanah, you haven't done anything by definition. I'll give you a great example. Let's say I take the lulav on Sukkah without awareness. We could debate, have I fulfilled the mitzvah or not? Do mitzvah tshikha kavanah, or do they not? Let's say I pray without awareness. Let's say I open a siddur and I think I'm reading the Queen's phone book. I happen to speak Hebrew, so I'm able to read the siddur. But I have no sense of actually doing a mitzvah of talking to God. You could argue that that's not subject to debate, whether mitzvah tshikha kavanah or not. Clearly, tefillah would require that kind of awareness. And maybe Shema also, because Shema is Kabbalah Malchut Shemayim, the kind of mitzvah that require that awareness. So it could be that the Shema example might be a separate example. Okay? Yeah, Nimrod.
I don't understand actually why we need a kiddush over the cup to be motzef for the people who can't daven, because we already have the magen avot afterwards. Couldn't it also make them motzef for the tefillah if they couldn't daven?
That's an interesting question. You have to think about like which text. No, but Magen Avot is not the same as the text of Vayechulu. You have to figure out like what.
Well, we say Hakadosh Shabbat. That is Kiddush.
No, but they're not saying it. You're saying they're listening though. It's the same thing. All right, it's an interesting question. Interesting question. I have to think about it. That is an interesting question. What? No, but they want to claim as long as there's some kind of Shabbat recital that could serve as the Kiddush. You have to figure out like what recital really classifies as Kiddush. Okay, what do you think we're done? Oh, but then Benji's question is a great question.
Exactly, no, but that's why they say that's one of the reasons why, like, we're not going to talk about in the event that a husband were to daven, you better
right.
Offer his wife to say Kiddush for him.
Right, correct.
He leaves with the tefillah rabbanan.
No, but that's not assuming anything about the good Shabbos. That's just assuming that the tefillah he davens.
No, that assumes that fundamentally him just saying
no, but the fact that the Amidah works for Kiddush doesn't prove that any mention of Shabbos works for Kiddush.
No, my point is since I'm not going to extrapolate even further, right? It shows that all we're talking about in this context is literally some acknowledgement, nothing, anything beyond.
Okay, Kiddush. Benji, great question. Present your safer, Benji. Okay, one more time. Yeah, motion.
We're even mocking you on doing it because we say the Yechul and again, we're doing it right afterwards, which are all parts of the Shmona Esrei that we said Friday night, but we say that just in case there's Shabbos or Gal, and they're coming up, we wouldn't be saying the Yechul and Friday night if we're talking about Shabbos or Gal.
Okay. You're right. You're right. All right, guys, we're going to continue the search. We got two solutions to justify Kiddush and Shul so far. The Rashba says we do it because we've always done it, Minog, and it's a fixed Takana. And the Rabbeinu Yonah that will at least fulfill Kiddush on at the right level, we just discussed the critique. Two more. Okay, guys, the fourth one's going to be great because the fourth one's going to come from Finland. The only halachic child I know in the history of the Judaism that came from Finland. But hang in there. Wait till we get to the fourth one. What? Well, let's go to the third one first. And the fourth one's for Finland. The third one's going to be for all the Lamdanim in the room. It's especially dedicated to Binyamin and Rav David. Okay, let's go to the third one right now. So, Evan, go to the Mordechai. Okay, source 7. The kata marina rab meirum, the makadish menekeset lo yishteh. Don't drink. Why should you drink? Because we all know. Because you're not yotzei kiddush, because you're not having a meal. Okay, wait, 1 second, Moshe Schwartz. Rav Shmuel Omer b'shem asar mikutzi, demutar ha-makadesh lishtot b'makam acher, the makadish could drink, v'lo chashiv kishote kodim kiddush. It's not considered drinking before kiddush. Let's play out the reason here, guys. It's going to get very long in 1 second. Why is it not considered drinking before kiddush? Because? Someone tell me, why is it not considered drinking before kiddush? Because you made kiddush. But you're still going to have to make kiddush again because? Here we go, guys. There's two ideas lurking here. What's one idea? A Jew should not eat or drink before kiddush. Second idea, kiddush is supposed to be, what have we been doing the entire shiur? Naturally, some of those go together. And therefore, if I didn't do kiddush makom suda, I can't eat or drink because I didn't fulfill kiddush yet. What if I totally, there's two separate dinim. A person, you shouldn't eat or drink unless they recited some kiddush. That's one din. There's another din that kiddush is meant to be. What if I can fulfill one without the other? Why could I drink in Joel? Because I make kiddush. Why do I have to make kiddush again at home? Because there's another principle of, but I could separate the two kiddushes. There's kiddush as the food allower, and there's kiddush as the meal connector. They don't have to be the same kiddush. One kiddush allows me to eat and drink. A different kiddush is the one that needs to be connected to the meal. There's two totally separate dinim. That solves the problem altogether. It's not pointless at all, because it's true. I'm not getting that kiddush makom suda theme, but I'm getting the kiddush as the food allower theme. And that allows me to do this right now. He has a very interesting proof, but I'm not going to do that. It's too complex. What end up now? Yeah, Bianca.
Then you should repeat Bori Pir Gafen.
No, why do I have to repeat Bori Pir Gafen? Not qua kiddush reasons. Why do I have to repeat Bori Pir Gafen? For bracha reasons. Because since I went home and I walked home for 20 minutes.
No, but now you're like, you said you fulfilled the food obligation already, originally, when you first said kiddush. The first kiddush.
No, but when I said the food obligation, I didn't mean Bori Pir Gafen. What I meant was that I can't eat or drink until it's been preceded by a kiddush. Some kind of kiddush needs to allow me to eat or drink. Okay. So I did that kiddush so I can eat or drink. Now there's a second question. Does my bread pick up from shul carry over to the home? That's a brachot question.
Okay?
Yeah, Yeshua. The Zermans are dominant forces here. Okay.
This implies that mitzvah, the halacha, the mitzvah, has nothing to do with eating or drinking. It just has to do with a connection.
Yes, well said. If you want to separate the themes.
Why do you need
kiddush
to connect the meal? Why can't you use some other form?
Maybe kiddush is what gives a certain atmosphere to the whole Shabbos meal. And therefore, I want every meal to be preceded by a kiddush. It sets the tone for what a Shabbos meal is. That's a good question. Why shalosh doesn't have kiddush? That's a good question. Yeah.
I know the Rabbanan distinction of like the kiddush. Yeah. The
you don't think it's... I thought that was the Sar Mikutzi. You don't think it's Pshat? You're going to love it, Rav David. You're going to be in a good mood all of lunch if you read that Sarmi Kutzi.
I don't understand what you say. I mean, conceptually, I agree with Yom. Because the whole lot, there's a fundamental distinction between Kiddush during the night and Kiddush during the day. So Kiddush during the night serves a function of creating awareness of Kiddush during the day is about mood setting, basically. So it's just important for your gospel. So to say that there's the idea of the meal of the Machai of an Akmetz of Kiddush at night is a hard sell. Because the whole, in other words, the whole nighttime Kiddush is really not about mood.
Look, once already you're reading that the daytime Kiddush has the meal theme, why could the nighttime Kiddush have two themes? It has both the totality of Shabbat theme.
No, because that's the whole point. Because again, it's not the same thing. In other words, what we're doing during the meal and in Shal Shu's corner is the Bori Pir Gafen. That's a mood set. Not even Kiddush, just a saying of Bori Pir Gafen gives Hashivas to the meal. When it comes to Friday night, the whole liturgical piece to it proves the point that it's not at all about mood setting. In other words, there's no real mood setting.
No, well, don't forget, we still have the rule of Ein Kiddush Makom Suda at night. So
exactly. That's because in order for that's a function of the Kiddush, not a function of the meal. And there's normally Kiddush to be something of substance that has to be connected to the meal for some reason. It's not because the meal activates an obligation at night. Why would it activate? What logic would it be?
I would say once you have that idea in the daytime, why is it so crazy that it should exist at night also? We want to create a mood in the daytime. We want to create a mood for the meal at night.
No, but in the liturgy. The liturgical difference.
No, because it encompasses, since it has the other theme, therefore there's more liturgy, but it has this theme also.
Well, No, but the reason why during the day it's more essential is because the day itself, right, doesn't really have any, I mean, it's maybe more speculative, doesn't have any mitzvahs that are connected with it, in the sense that you actually generate any uniqueness of the day. Whereas at night, when you already have candle lighting, right, and stuff like that, you already have some kind of thematic attempt to kind of visually make distinctions. And what I'm struggling with is, like, it's, the mood setting is a nice idea, but where do we also, is there any other parallel in the law where you have the mood setting as being an active law complication? Well, I think it was is candlelight. Candlelight is an idea.
Right.
If you have a Friday night, you do that. The Shabbos more, you want to do the symbolic. And Friday night, we have trouble with that.
Okay. I hear the critique. All right, guys. Last solution now. Solution for Moshe Schwartz. Sorry.
Two questions. One, why is this whole thing like negated if you're davening in the local minyan?
What do you mean?
I mean, like, you don't say Magen Avot, or you don't say...
That Magen Avot is separate from the Kiddush question.
I'm
going to leave it aside for now. Okay? It's a good question, but I'm going to leave it aside for now. Okay, last one, guys. Everyone should know who this is. Very important person. Okay, there was a rabbi of the 20th century named Rabbi Yehiel Yaakov Weinberg. Let me say a little bit about him, and there's actually... Do we have Mark Shapiro's book? Okay, a little bit about this fellow. Okay, as you guys may know, that in Eastern Europe, in European Jewry, there was a split. Western Europe was much more part of larger culture. Like, Western European rabbis went to university. Eastern European rabbis were much less exposed to broader culture. Rabbi Yehiel Yaakov Weinberg was an interesting fellow because he straddled both worlds. He first learned in a yeshiva called Slobodka, one of the classic yeshivas of Eastern Europe. And then he went and got a university degree in Western Europe, in Germany. So that was also interesting about him. And then, unfortunately, during World War II, actually, unfortunately not, he survived World War II because he was a Russian citizen and the Germans filed him as a Russian prisoner of war. So instead of being in a concentration camp, he was in a Russian POW camp. That's how he survived World War II. After the war, he kind of was like a little bit of a broken person. He moved to Switzerland, and he lived the rest of his life in Montreux, Switzerland. He got all kinds of offers to teach in America and Israel, and he turned them down. And even if you look at the name of his book, okay, it's very indicative. What is Sri De Eishmin? Anyone? What's a Sarit of something? Where's our Hebraist? Novi. What's a Sarit? Okay, very good. Who said that? Very good. Yeah, he's the Hebraist. Jay Kavan, you're the Hebraist. Okay, the survivor of the fire. Why? If you call your book, you're the remnant of the fire, that says something about how you experience the world. There's a lot of famous Shmuel in that Sefer. Okay, the most famous one for all you B'nai Akiva fanatics out there is about co-ed youth groups. It's a famous tshuva our co-ed youth groups don't care about. Okay, you should all learn it with your morning rabbi when they have a very interesting tshuva.
What do you say?
Okay, I'm not telling you. See, you gotta wait your appetite a little bit. Okay, it's in the second chelik. I think it's tshuva chet. Okay, take a look. It's three days. It's a very good tshuva. Okay, so now he got a lot of interesting questions. And he also, by the way, he's a good machshava sefer also that nobody knows about called Lifrakim, which is in the back there next to Jay Kaplan. You're all looking for good machshava. Great readings of Agadot. Right there, all Rebbeim. If you haven't used it, you should use that. Lefrakim, it's a wonderful machshava sefer. Okay, so in any case, he was asked by the chief rabbi of Finland the following question. Apparently, the old minhag in Finland was to make kiddush and shul. And then during World War II, they didn't really have access to wine. I mean, it was hard to get kosher wine in Finland, so they stopped making kiddush and shul. Now World War II came to an end, thank God. Now here comes something very interesting. Sometimes in life, guys, the community and the rabbi has a halachic debate. Here it is. What happened? Anyone get to this tshuva? What does the rabbi want?
He wants to be
Kiddush. Interesting enough, the rabbi wants to stop it. Because the rabbi said, I never thought there was any point to it. I think now there are no guests in shul. We shouldn't be making Kiddush. I want to stop the minhag. What does the community want? It's like the community was more attached to the old minhag. We remember back in 1937 we were making Kiddush in shul. We want to go back and make Kiddush again. Okay, so you got a debate between the community and the rabbi. Okay, so they sent a question to Rabbi Yehiel Yaakov Weinberg to the Sri Yesh. Let's look in the second paragraph. To me, it's a beautiful answer. Guys, if you missed the whole year, just wake up for this. This part, this whole paragraph is amazing. Sof Tavar, Datiu Lanig Shuv Kiddush Veda Knesset. Who does he side with? The community. Now look what he tells the rabbi. V'al Yakpid Al Kvodo. What does he tell the rabbi? How might the rabbi do in this situation? It'll be a loss of kavod if I had a debate with my community and I lost. Says the rabbi, no, al yakpid al kvodo. Shekvod hamakom v'kvod hagonim shiastu menegzeh gadol yoter. What's his first point? This is not the most significant point. Why should you be so makbid on your kavod? Because the kavod of God and the kavod of other authorities is more important. But look at his second point. Ad rabba. It is actually zeu kvodo she'eino omeid al dato. That is very powerful, guys. Great muster for life. What did he just say? Actually, you know what's going to enhance your kavod? The fact that you're able to admit you're wrong. Guys, I give you great advice for life. Even if you're not going to be a teacher, if you're going to be a parent, there's very often a common fear of a teacher or parent. You're afraid to admit you're wrong because you think you admit you're wrong, you're going to undermine your authority. Right? If I tell my kid, you know, I got angry at you and it really was not your fault. Really, it was my fault just because I had a bad day at work. That's why I got angry at you. Right? But it's, you say, oh, that's going to undermine my entire parental authority. I shouldn't do that. Guys, my experience in life is exactly the opposite. If you're willing to admit to your students and your children when you're wrong, that it's not going to undermine your authority. If anything, it's only going to enhance your authority. They will respect you more for your ability to say you're wrong. This is a powerful initiative, by the way. That's what this 3A says to this rabbi. Your worry is going to be a loss of kavod if you admit the community's right. This is actually going to enhance your kavod. So, okay, Benjamin Zimmerman, if you're coaching the football team, you can admit you the wrong strategy. Don't worry, it's going to undermine your authority. It's
going to
be.
I'm going to lose this here.
Okay, fine. Next, you say it's all a theoretical question.
Yeah.
Okay, next, guys. That's going to get even better than that. So that was one. That was a very, very important point. Now, Lilamed the Dora Bem Shalaya Demomed Adrav. He quotes the Mishnah Eidiot. Hey, Jake, you remember that Eidiot Mishnah? We learned it in Rambam together. Why does the Mishnah record that Beit Hillel changed his mind? Why bother? It's a waste of space. Why tell me Beit Hillel originally thought A because he went to Chagiga? This comes up in the Chagiga, right? Why bother tell me Beit Hillel originally thought A and then moved up to B? So what's the answer? Why do that? Why did they put that in the Mishnah, Jake Grimberg? So people will realize it's a value to know you were wrong. I originally thought A, and now I think B. It was worth it to spend time in the Mishnah just to instill that value. Okay, next. What about this particular case? Says the Shridesh. The Ode, second to last line. Sheyesh b'zev mishum chinuch tziburi v'kidush shabbat b'frehesya u'mosif chein v'yofi shel kedusha l'knisat yom ha'kadosh. Is that beautiful? What does he want to claim? Why is it good? It creates a beauty, it creates a Shabbos feel to our public gathering together in Shul. Look what he says in the last line. Ulai yitzaru al yidekein l'tshuva l'kadesh kan beisam. Presumably, what's the nature of the community in Helsinki? Presumably it is not particularly observant. So what's happening now? The Kiddush almost takes on an educational turn. What is Kiddush about? Let's educate community. There's something called Kiddush. Maybe one day they will say Kiddush at home themselves. But now I would like to argue for a fourth model. We said before, what was the first model? Sometimes you do things just because we've always done them. Sometimes, even if the reason doesn't apply, it could take on a new meaning. It's not pointless. It's not the reason we originally did it, but yet it has a purpose. I would like to argue, maybe that's what the creation is saying here. Formally, is anybody being Yotze Kiddush there in Helsinki? No, nobody's being Yotze Kiddush because nobody is eating in Shul. But what does Kiddush become now? Kiddush becomes this public educational message, giving atmosphere to the Friday night davening, teaching the community of Finnish Jews that there's something called Kiddush, and now has halakhic purpose, divorced from its original halakhic purpose. So just to sum up our four theories here, guys, we should all be able to rattle them off. I didn't have time. I was going to tell you a Helsinki story. We're going to run out of time. Actually, I'll do it for 1 minute. Okay, I was in Helsinki twice in my life for a very weird reason.
Helsinki,
yes. Okay, I went twice to Russia to run Pesach Storm for Jews. But guys, if you go into Jewish education, you can see the world. It's another good reason to become a Jewish educator. Okay, so most of the interesting places I've been in the world is because I was doing something educational. Okay, so I went to Russia twice. The first time, two of my friends and I were going to go from Israel in 1991, and we weren't getting visas. We were supposed to go to Estonia to run a Pesach Seder in Estonia, and we weren't getting visas. But they said that if you go to Finland, it's kind of a rubber stamp. It's like just a bus, like a little boat ride over the Baltic Sea from Helsinki to Estonia, and everybody gets a visa there. So it was a little bit of a risky move, because we flew to Helsinki with the possibility we'd get stuck in Finland for Pesach. But luckily, it was really a rubber stamp, and we got in the boat and went to Estonia, and it worked out great. I'll tell you more stories about it some other time when I'm not close to lunch. But on the way back, of course, we had to travel the same way. So we took the boat back from Estonia to Finland. But here's the weird thing. I did not make it up. You can go look this up. Okay, there's a festival in Helsinki called Vapu. I would not make such a thing up. In Vapu festival, everybody puts on weird hats and gets inebriated, right? So they all get drunk, the entire town. Okay, so go look it up online. I can show you my pictures. So basically, my two friends and I, we like the three sober people in all of Helsinki in Vapu festival. Okay, so there is such a thing. I've been to Helsinki. You don't want to go there. Okay. Okay, so now let's go back to the whole shiur here, guys, for a second. Okay. Those of us in Israel, all you this Friday night, you all be able to explain this to your hosts. Why are they not making Kiddush and Shul? They used to do it in Talmudic times. David Berger, how come they're not making Kiddush and Shul? There's no purpose. Why in Talmudic times was there a purpose?
Guests.
Because guests were actually eating in Shul. Excellent. But now they challenge you. Oh, you Americans are always doing the wrong thing. Why are you making Kiddush and Shul back home? You'll now say, I have four possible justifications for our Kiddush and Shul. What would the Rashba say? We're making Kiddush and Shul because that's the tradition. The Takan is just fixed. What would Rabbeinu Yoda say? At least at a Deraita level, you're fulfilling Kiddush. What would the Sar Mikutzi say in the Mordechai? Why is it still okay? Because there's two separate things. There's Kiddush Magnum Suda part, and there's the Kiddush that allows eating. I'm just doing the Kiddush allowing eating part. The other part I'll do later. What would the Sri Diyan say? It's now taking on a new role. Now it's this adding luster to the davening, educational. That is why we're not. Sometimes in life, things take on new meaning over time. Okay, last part of the review, guys. We have Yeshua Zerman's crushing question. How can we give it to a kid? After all, you wouldn't feed a kid treif. How can we give him wine before Kiddush? What are the Magen Avraham's two answers? One, it's not so severe. It's not a lav. It's not like eating actual treif food. Second answer, the Yom Tovin answer? It's not inherent. It's not like deep metaphysical taint. It's not treif. It is kosher food that happens to be in a time that is time like Rav David.
Some symbol, right, to kind of symbolize that this is actually a religious action. Therefore, according to that logic, the reason why you have to have kids in Shabbos morning is not because of the mitzvah of fusion sayyol, because to make the point that lunch is not an ordinary lunch, it's a Shabbos lunch. So it's a question about the nature of religious symbolism, you have religious experience without those symbols.
Okay. You're very good to be done. Okay, and last one, guys, most important point, remember, yeah, all the kiddush stuff we said? What was the Sri Diyan's advice to this rabbi in Finland? Do not think that admitting you're wrong is going to lose cover. It's only going to enhance your prestige. All right, guys, have a great afternoon.
Thank you.